Our next speaker is Dr. Kathy Hughes, and she received her doctorate of nursing practice in public health nursing option from the University of Tennessee Science Center, College of Nursing in Memphis in 2010. Prior to that, she had a master's of science in community health nursing and a postmaster's certificate in adult health nursing from the University of Southern Mississippi. Growing up on the Gulf Coast, she early in her life was involved with disaster preparedness. She has worked with adult medical surgical patients and families in New Orleans, Biloxi, and Hattiesburg, as well as in the clinic and the surgery settings in ophthalmology. Currently, she's an instructor of public health nursing at the University of Southern Mississippi, Hattiesburg campus. Her professional interests include activities which foster volunteerism, disaster preparedness, clinical simulation, oral histories, wound care, and Caribbean studies. And welcome.
Thank you. We're just hitting the tab to go over. Did you hit the tab? Oh, you hit down. Okay. Welcome. Glad to have you. I'm going to talk to you today about connecting the past and the present in a town that you probably never heard of, Baxterville, Mississippi. I grew up in Mississippi. I left for my nursing school, and I've been in different areas of the state. But until I actually started teaching public health nursing, and even several years after that, never really heard of Baxterville, Mississippi, and never knew its significance. I have noticed nothing to disclaim. I just want to talk to you today about these environmental events and about their aspects about the connection with public health. And when I saw the theme of think global, act local, this really sort of caught my attention. And it's also future opportunities of our nursing students as well as interdisciplinary students. So we like to tell stories in the South. So I'm going to tell you a story about community assessment and its connections, historical backgrounds, and then some of the history of the area. Some of you may recognize this little logo, the Atomic Energy Commission. I do it more from a science background than I do think of the commission. But when we look at the age of our learners that come through, even though we have a variety of learners, for a lot of learners, if it didn't happen during their lifetime or it wasn't a big sprite in a history book, it just got passed over. So as we prep our students to go to this, many of them go, Cuban Missile Crisis, what are you talking about? Atomic detonation, don't know what you're talking about. And so we have to back up and really talk to them about things and then to let them know what happened. So salt domes and coal wars. I'm going to show you a slide in just a minute about the salt domes. We have many salt domes across the country. We have some in our area. There's some in southern Louisiana. Texas, certainly, with their gas stores, have had them. So they're around, and their composition can be a little bit different. But we have one large one where this project was done. But in about another 15 miles away, we have some other salt domes, and they were chosen for different reasons. When you look at this, and we started finding out some background on it, our forester ended up being the first person that had more information before we went to the documents, because he's the one that's now the keeper of some of the land, and they control who goes in and out. But we did have nuclear testing globally. If you go back to the time in the 60s and before the Cuban Missile Crisis, sometimes there were friendly treaties that were voluntary that they encouraged people to be a part of and not to test. Then there were some bans that happened. But during, right before the bans, people wondered who else is testing and who else is actually doing detonations and what do we need to know. And from what we ascertained to some of the seismographic testing the ways that they did test and record, they didn't have a lot of data. It was an early science. So they knew whenever you did a nuclear detonation that they knew what it was with rock, but they didn't know what it was with salt, and so they started doing it there. But when they did go and outlaw it atmospherically, shortly after that, they also said you couldn't go below sea and you couldn't do it in space. So where do you go? Well, they decided to go below ground because it wasn't below water. So that was one of the things that they looked at. And these are some images of the time. The turtle, Bert, duck and cover, I don't really remember these. But my husband says he does, and he's younger than me. So I don't know if it was the emphasis in school of what we had Public shelters, certainly, and fallout shelters were around. The circular yellow here that you would see, civil defense over on the right, that was found just a few years ago. Found that from an article online that they found it in a basement of a school in the last several years, and it had really been left untouched. So it was just a historic background of what you did. So as we started one of our community assessments, that's the town is 25 miles from campus. It is a community, not an incorporated town. We go from an 8-lane highway to a 4-lane highway. We turn off on a 2-lane highway with a highly residential section, up-and-coming area where they've just spent two elementary schools that have 950 students in each one. You go down that road maybe 5 miles, and then you start turning onto the roads that are named after people, you know, Howard Tucker Road and this, that road, the Purvis Olo Road. You get all these intersection roads that go. So we're not talking about somewhere really, you have to know that you have to have an intent to go. It's not just somewhere you pass by. So as we get close to the gate, we turn into a dirt road. And as you get to the gate, they've now removed the $100,000 fine for entering sign. But it does say you have to enter with permission, and you have to plan it. So at one time, we were wondering what's behind that gate. And you know, it's public health. We just got to know. We just got to know. So we started asking around. And what we found out is we asked the neighbor across the street. And he said, oh, that's the salt dome. That's the test site. And we were, okay, tell us more. Well, as it ended up, we kept talking, and one of the other instructors, the neighbor, was her brother. So you find those connections. The brother said he knew the forester. So it took us almost 3 months to find the appropriate telephone numbers. So it delayed us getting started with some of this. But sometimes you just find the right person at the right time. So where is Baxterville, Mississippi? Hattiesburg is 1 mile off the coast. Capital. And then Baxterville is in southwest from there. When I have my 3-foot, 4-foot map, you have the big sprites, and then suddenly it's just one line that gets you there. So GPS, not always accurate. So we go as a cluster. Sometimes they get lost anyway. We don't allow us to meet them. They have to go with the wagon train effect. And why Lamar County? Well, we have the salt domes, and these are lines that are above are the 5 aquifers that are above it and beside and within it, and they change in their pH and lime that they have towards the bottom. And it's a cavern that's filled full of salt, like you would mine. But this is where sometimes the gas stores are made. But in this one is where they're actually going to do a nuclear detonation. It was plugged. We also, the reason why they chose this is they agreed to have a 4-lane highway. I think at one time it was a 2, so they made it a 4-lane highway. We had trees. We had water access for some of the pumping out to go into the water tables. They're at about 400 feet elevation, so it was an optimal place. There were several other places that were also considered, but this is one of the ones at the end. Certainly, there's a book I'll reference at the end. Politics were involved, national, state, all of those, many conversations, as well as our commerce for timber was involved. There was a railroad, too, that ran through there. And this is right about the time that they've done the detonation. But the one on your left is someone stacking pecans. We call them pecans, not pecans. Pecans, and she's stacking them so that if they have any seismographic shift, the pecans would go off, and more than that shifted. The middle ones where the chimney came loose from the house. And the inside on your right is the gentleman that everything shook inside, his refrigerator, his stove, the furniture moved. And these are well documented on some of our PBS stations and some of our historical archive things that we have. Resources, Atomic Energy Commission definitely was a part of this, U.S. Forestry Commission. And since this time, it's been turned over in December 2010, to the state of Mississippi and the Mississippi Forest Commission. There is a book that's out where a doctoral student has gone back with all the archival things and put it together with atomic testing in Mississippi, Dr. David Allen Burke, which I have no association. He's got a lot of information compiled for us. So there was a project called Project Dribble that had two blasts, the Project Sterling second and the Project Salmon first. And this is the marker where the actual device was lowered. They don't call it a bomb. You call it a nuclear device. And it was lowered down 2,700 feet into the ground. It was a 5.3 kiloton device, which is a third of the size of the bomb used at Hiroshima. Okay? Get your attention now. The second one was a 3.8 megaton, so a much smaller one. One was done in October of 64, the other one done in December of 66. So this is the marker, and it goes, I know you can't read that from there, but it goes on to tell the dates and the time. And then there were two separate ones that were gas explosions that they did, so there was no nuclear or radioactive debris. We go on site, and these are now the cylinders you're looking at here are the aquifer where they go down and do the measurements of the water quarterly in 8 different sites of 5 aquifers. They take, and we walk. The students are well prepped before. If they don't want to go or have any misgivings about going, they're not required to go. They have to go to the library where this is the documents are and find out certain information. They're not required to go. They usually want to go, though. And then they need to come with long pants, long sleeves if they can, some DEET because we have some substantial mosquito population, and you can look at the environment and know that we can't eliminate that. But we drive around and we see the aquifers that really look very unimpressive to students, okay? 4 orange poles in the aquifer. So we look through all of this and drive around and walk in the area. They also, tritium is a byproduct of radioactivity, and they bore the trees for this. So they are also doing this on 300 marked trees within the property, and it just so happened that the girls started twisting, but the guys end up having to finish twisting to go into the bore length is about a foot to get through the tree. And then they'll take that off for analysis. This is some of the sites inside that were taken down in 1971 and 72 when they closed this project. We're looking at the tree regrowth because they scraped this area down totally, and there were housing built and shelters and things like that. So this is what they see whenever they go. For some of ours, even though we're a very rural state, some of our students have never been out of the concrete jungle, and they are absolutely, you know, just out of their element. And, you know, we always tell them we stop one last place to go to the bathroom because you're going to go to the bathroom in the woods if you don't, and that really messes with them. So, and I always have to take 2 or 3 really over the hill, you know, and we have to be, you know, we have what we take in, we take out, and no, they don't like that. So, you know, Boy Scout rule, so. But anyway, sometimes we have more water than others. And then this is Wayne Tucker, that's our forester. And what's on the lower right is where the gas line was when they did the 2 detonations to the gas line. One was which was not set. Lightning hit it the night before it was supposed to actually go off. So they did have some seismographic readings anyway. So the purpose of the seismograph reading was to know if anybody else was misbehaving and doing a time. They wanted to know what was the difference in an earthquake and somebody detonating a bomb back during the Cold War, because they didn't have a way of knowing. So this was one of the ways that they did it. So as we go through all this, we look at some of our course objectives, scope and standards, functions, partnerships, proactive attitudes and behavior, and ethical approaches. And they want to know, well, what's been done to this this group, this population, that since then? We think about, as we're starting service learning projects, Pender's model, so that we can decide what's our next direction to do with this. Now, this particular area had less than 1,000 people in residence. There were 400 families that, at the time in 1964, that were removed. And I say removed, they were evacuated for so many days at the blast site. They were paid $10 for the adult and $5 for children. There were people that their houses did have to be, have some compensation done. Every so many years, when it's an anniversary, about that time, they'll say, you know, we've got higher cancer rates, or we've had a leukemia. Again, at one time, I think the population was like, it was less than 600, 589, something like that. So we're talking about a small amount of people to get a significant zone. They have come in over time and tried to find out if there was any higher rate than normal. They haven't. But if you look, if you were 30 years old then, you're close to 80 now. If you're a newborn or a child, you're in your 50s. So that's really going to be more the second generational that some of that will come with, because a lot of the families, this was large tracts of family land, and although they left, they came back, there was another blast, they left, they came back. They weren't, they don't live on the site, and no one lives on the site now, but you do have, the opportunity of a longer exposure. They have found, there was like one tree that they found some trillium then, nothing since. U.S. Public Health Service really came in to look at them in the 60s for evacuation, and we cannot find that they've come for exposure or any risk, and that's something that we're trying to find out. So we're looking at the importance of this and wellness, and looking at things with critical thinking with the students. What would they do? So what would they do next? And finding some more data is our next stage, because we haven't been allowed in very many times. The last time was during the Tropical Depression came, and I can't have them out there when the Tropical Depression may turn to a hurricane, so we had to cancel that one. But we've only had a limited time since it's been open to the public. Next thing that they're doing is trying to get multidisciplinary to come in together so that we can work from many different angles and update this. And again, we are about, next year will be the 50-year mark. So the 45-year mark, television took it up again, reminded us all of it. Sometimes the person they pick is something that is not my ideal person they pick someone that has had some question about it, and so we would like to have both sides of it. So when we look at what's unknown and some of the dwellings and some of their outcomes, we'd still like to know that to be able to make sure that they are having appropriate services. And they are still looking it's a restored site with restricted visitation, but you can, if you get the right person, get in. We don't stay overnight. We only stay for a couple of hours. The foresters, they are working every day because they are managing the timber. So that they're probably the biggest exposure now. The other recommendation was no residential site, and that's indefinite, and no consumption of anything that's in the land where the sluice pit was, where the overflow was, because they have taken all that contaminated area out and sent it either to Oak Ridge or to Nevada. And Nevada and Alaska were testing about this time, too.
Okay.
And that's greetings from University of Southern Mississippi.